Welcome to The Big Rich Show. This podcast will focus on conversations with friends and acquaintances within the four-wheel drive industry. Many of the people that I will be interviewing, you may know the name, you may know some of the history, but let's get in depth with these people and find out what truly makes them a four-wheel drive enthusiast. So now's the time to sit back, grab a cold one, and enjoy our conversation.
Whether you're crawling the Red Rocks of Moab or hauling your toys to the trail, Maxxis has the tires you can trust for performance and durability. Four wheels or two, Maxxis tires are the choice of champions because they know that whether for work or play, for fun or competition, Maxxis tires deliver. Choose Maxxis. Tread victoriously.
Why should you read Four Low Magazine? Because Four Low Magazine is about your lifestyle, the four-wheel drive adventure lifestyle that we all enjoy. Rock crawling, trail riding, event coverage, vehicle builds, and do-it-yourself tech all in a beautifully presented package. You won't find Four Low on the newsstand rack, so subscribe today and have it delivered to you. On today's episode of Conversations with Big Rich, we have RJ Brown. RJ Brown has been around the rock crawling scene from the very beginning. We're pretty damn close to it. And RJ is out of Farmington. We'll find out all the rest of his history here real soon. But RJ, thank you for coming on board and sharing your life with our listeners.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so let's get started and jump right into it. First off, what does RJ stand for?
Ralph John. How about that?
Ralph
John.
About a million
people ask me.
Huh. You know, I've known you a long time, and I've never asked you that. I just figured it was like Ron Jr. or something like that, you know? Never knew.
Yep, I get that all the time. It's me and my dad have the same name, so I've been RJ since I was born. I'm one of the lucky kids that your parents name you something, and then they never call you that, so...
Yeah, there you go. Well, I was the second, so I'm glad they didn't call me, hey, number two. Although they probably did, just not to my face. A little shithead, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
So anyway, where did you grow up? Where were you born and raised?
It's kind of crazy. I was born in New York, but my parents moved to Albuquerque when I was less than a year old, and then I lived in Albuquerque till I was five, and then moved to Farmington, and I've been Farmington ever since. The only time I left was for college for 4 years in Las Cruces, but I ended up back in Farmington, and I haven't ever left.
Wow, okay. So I have to ask a question. First of all, reference it for those who do not know RJ. He has a brother named Joe. Who's older?
I am older by 2 years.
By 2 years. Okay. I never knew that one either. Okay. So
I'm aging a little bit better than he is, I think.
And better looking, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I'll let you guys decide on that one.
Yeah.
So let's talk about those early years. You probably don't remember a whole lot of Albuquerque at 5 years old or so. Probably nothing of New York.
But, yeah.
What do you remember those early years in Farmington?
I don't know. I mean, it was a really small town back then. Obviously, it's grown and it's probably even changed a lot since you started coming here. But for the longest time, it was just a really small town, so really personable town. I mean, it didn't really have any issues or anything like that for, you know, all of my growing up. I mean, it was just kind of out of the way and hidden and good place to grow up. We obviously didn't have any big city problems or anything like that. It's just a little town.
Right. So, or what was your first mode of transportation? Like a bicycle? Motorcycle?
Oh, yeah, bicycles. I was really big into bicycles, me and my brother both.
Okay, so BMX or?
Yeah, we did all that. We did all the half pipe stuff and jumps and all the things that we probably should have broke a lot of bones and we really never did. So, and then for bikes, we went to three-wheelers, you know, and we survived all the three-wheeler stuff that they apparently say that it was dangerous.
And then you guys get cages later on, and yeah, that becomes even more dangerous.
Yeah. Yep. We've put ourselves out there quite often.
Yes. Yeah, you have. So let's, how did your, I know that growing up there, you have a lot of opportunity for the outdoors. I mean, Farmington is just surrounded by what I would call high desert, lots of canyons, sandy washes, rocks, all that kind of stuff, rivers. You know, what were the other things that you did that got you into a life of off-road?
Well, I mean, when we first started, you know, we were young, 10, 11 years old. And back in that day, I mean, we had three-wheelers and, you know, I lived 3 minutes from the, you know, from the hills, from Chokecherry Canyon. And, you know, no phones, no nothing. I mean, we would get on our three-wheelers and drive into the street, right out into the hills. And we would go riding for hours out into in the hills with our three-wheelers. And, you know, parents just let you do that, I guess, back then. You know, they didn't worry about it, I guess. It's like the true meaning of, like, when the street light turns on, you better be home. And that was it.
Yeah, I grew up in those years, too, but in a bigger city. But
yeah,
I get it. So in school, we'll get back to the three-wheelers here a little bit. Were you athletic, scholastic, or were you just did your own thing?
I was athletic. I mean, I rolled through all the sports. I did football, baseball. I guess those were my two main sports. Football eventually was the only thing I played. And yeah, kind of when I got into high school, I kind of had to give up sports. I got into cars and I didn't have no money. My parents didn't have a bunch of money, so I had to work. So I kind of gave up sports to work and keep my car going.
Support your car habit. I get it. I understand that. So what was your first car?
A two-door hardtop 1957 Chevy.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Nice. Nice.
My dad pulled it out of a barn when I was 14, and we worked on it for a year. And then back then, you got your driver's license at 15, and you were off. You didn't have all this provisional this and that the kids have to deal with now. I mean, you at 15, you were driving. So we had it fixed up pretty good. It ran pretty good. And that was kind of my start of motorsports type stuff. I don't know if I was the bad kid or whatever, but that's all I did is drag race every single weekend. And most of my friends had fast cars. I mean, Chevelles and Transams and just everything, every muscle car you could think of, Roadrunners, Mustangs. So we had a pretty big group of friends that had old stuff and fast stuff, and we broke a lot. And my dad was pretty understanding. I had to pay for everything, but he was pretty understanding to have, you know, all my friends usually in the driveway or in their garage repairing engines, trannies, rear ends. And that was kind of my start of motorsports and liking fast stuff and kind of, I guess, living on the edge a little bit.
So living on the edge, you talked about the three-wheelers, you know, the government made Honda quit selling those things because they were too dangerous, supposedly.
Yeah, supposedly.
Yeah.
And I never got it. I still don't understand that, but, you know.
And look at all the things that they allow kids to do now.
Yeah.
Electronic wheels and everything else, you know, motored wheels, whatever those things are called, one wheels. looks a lot more dangerous than a three-wheeler. Well, maybe not as fast though. So,
yeah.
So did you ever race them, or was it just strictly out, you know, messing around out in Chokecherry and other locations around the city?
Well, so south of Farmington is the Big Nappy, the reservation and stuff. And up there, they have the flattest, straightest roads you can ever think of. They're in all those farm fields. So every Friday, Saturday night, we would go up there and drag race. And there could be 30, 40 different cars up there. And, you know, around Farmington, you have Bloomfield, Aztec. You got these little small towns, and it's the norm, you know, who's got the fastest car. So you go up there, and we would go do a lot of racing. And then when we were done with the racing, then it was like, then you get in your buddy's four-wheel drives, and then you get out in the hills. So it was always busy weekends.
And busy enough to keep you out of trouble, right?
Yeah, I stayed pretty much. Well, I don't know if I've been. I guess I got myself a lot of speeding tickets, a lot of racing tickets. I wasn't always, I guess, the kid that was. Not everybody was allowed to play with me, I don't think.
You were that everybody kid hated that my car. The influence, huh?
Yeah, everybody. All the parents hated my car because it was way too fast for a kid. I didn't think so. I mean, but, you know, whatever. My dad was always into fast cars and stuff like that. So,
well, let's talk about that 57 Chevy then. What did what had you done to it to make it faster than factory?
Well, you know, first off, when I first got it, it had a 327, and those always run pretty good.
Yes.
We just did a bunch of bolt-ons to it. It had a two-speed power glide and, you know, like 330 gears and a one-legger rear end and all that. And, you know, right away I blew the tranny out of it. So then I changed it to a Muncie four-speed and, you know, intake, and we put cam and, you know, carburetor on it. And then I put 14 gears. I actually worked at a junkyard for free on Saturdays just so I could get parts from all the old cars.
Nice.
And so I worked there for 4 hours a day, and then he'd give me an hour to go, you know, get whatever I wanted off all these old cars. And back then, no one really cared about any of those. I mean, people love 57 Chevys, but it still wasn't really a big deal back then. That was late 80s, you know. So I, you know, 14 gears, posi, and then Muncie four speed, and it doesn't take a lot to make something run pretty good.
Right.
Obviously not like what you can buy nowadays. I mean, you can buy 700 horsepower just off the dealer, you know, so it was different.
Yeah. The fastest cars in the 80s, they weren't, nothing being produced was really very fast because
we'd
just gotten out of that whole OPEC crap and stuff with the oil embargoes and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So the manufacturers were building dumb cars.
Yeah.
So everybody was building old metal for sure.
Old metal. And we thought it was fast back then. And then, you know, then you realize, you know, that probably was fast at the time, but it wasn't really that fast. Then while I was doing, I had that. My dad got a 66 Chevelle. We built that up. And he started with a small block, and then he couldn't beat any of the high school kids. So then he pulled that out, and he got a 427 big block put in it. And we built my brother a 70 Chevelle SS. I mean, so we always had a bunch of pretty fast cars in our family, I guess. So
I like that. Your dad couldn't beat the high school guy, so then he went with the big block.
Yeah. Yep. That's my dad was, you know, he was definitely one of the cooler dads that he allowed more than he probably should have, but he would go up on top of the hill with us and he'd run his car. And if it wasn't fast enough, I mean, he obviously had way more money than all of us. He'd go back and buy all kinds of stuff and work on trying to beat us again and stuff like that. So
that's awesome. I love it. So then you said you went to college.
Uh-huh.
What'd you study in college?
Criminal justice.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay.
I was destined to be a Border Patrol agent. So when I went to college, I still had that same car, and I got into the drag racing down there, and there's a lot of Border Patrol agents down there that had fast cars because those guys made pretty good money. And it kind of steered me. I was already going for criminal justice. I just wasn't totally sure what I wanted to do. And then my goal kind of went to being a Border Patrol agent. And so I ended up with a criminal justice degree.
And did you ever work as a Border Patrol agent?
Nope. Right before I graduated, some family friends owned a Meineke muffler, and they decided they wanted to sell it. So I graduated, and like 3 months later, they self-financed me, and I bought my own business and just still into, cars and building cars. And, you're every day what a Meineke muffler does, mechanic work or whatever, but it was, gave us, 5,000 square foot of shop to build all of our toys and stuff. So.
And a decent income. There's nothing wrong with the trades.
Yeah. Yep. And, I don't regret any of it. It was, I don't know. I mean, all my buddies are retired at 20 and 25 years, and I'm still pedaling cars. So, but I had a good time all the way through this. A lot of this stuff that they wouldn't there. I kind of lined myself up to do a lot of motorsports stuff, being able to have my own shop like that.
Right. When did you and your brother did Brown's Fabrication as well, or was that just your brother?
Yeah.
Or? Okay.
No, so it was a Meineke muffler, and that was a franchise. And when I bought it, I had like 7 years of this contract left. And then when it expired, we started Brown's Fabrication. We just changed the name, basically same location. And by then, we did a lot of drag racing. And we just did, four wheeling as a hobby because it was obviously in our backyard. And then, I just kind of expanded the four wheeling kind of had a hit a boom. Late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, as a competitive sport, late 90s, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then started off in which series did you start off in? Or how did you get started in deciding to go off-road?
We didn't drive. We started with the Pro Rock. Well, I don't even think it was called Pro Rock at the time. It was It was Bob Hazel. He had a couple of them like in Las Cruces.
That was like the BFG championships and then the Warren championships in Johnson Valley.
Yeah. So he had like a couple of those. And then Ranch Pratt had ARCA, which I think was ARCA at the time. I think it changed a couple of times. It was in Farmington, and me and my brother judged the first event, and that was it. We had a vehicle built for the next competition.
For the next competition. All right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because Ranch started with Farmington and then went to Arizona, then Cedar
Phoenix.
City. Phoenix, yeah. Down there, what was he? It was Upper and Lower Woodpecker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Harold Doff, he gave us a Jeep to build, and that's what we started with.
Nice.
And Harold had already been, that guy had been wheeling and doing his thing for quite some time, going to the mountains, and he was kind of a little bit of ahead of everybody, I think. And he gave us a Jeep and we built it and we built him a few and just kind of progressed from there.
Awesome. Since Harold's not around to be able to interview him, let's talk a little bit about Harold, if you don't mind.
And, sure.
You know, what kind of guy he was and, you know, some of the things that you know that he did.
Well, Harold was he was a very giving guy. He loved to help people. Obviously, he owned a salvage yard, had a lot of stuff kind of in his back door. He was like, if you needed something, if you needed a transfer case, you needed something, he had it rat-holed in the back, and he would help you, give it to you, help you build it. He was just a good guy. He helped me and my brother out a lot. He had a pretty good crew. I mean, they would kind of have their own little group of, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 guys that they would go wheeling, and they'd go up into these canyons. And, you know, back then we 35s, and that was a big tire at the time. You know, that was unheard of because people were still running 32s and 33s.
Right.
So he was always ahead of most people for the longest time. You know, he was already putting 44s, and then he was putting Dana 60s out of trucks into Jeeps already. I mean, he was already figuring out how to narrow them up. And, you know, he was just, he had some good mechanics at his shop as well. And he figured out brakes. I mean, he made his own brake system. I mean, he was way ahead of most people at the time.
Right. Awesome. So then from that first Jeep, was it like a CJ or?
CJ7.
CJ7, okay. And you guys linked it all up or did you keep it?
So what's funny is we had leaf springs in the front, and then we had leaf springs in the rear, but we made like a drop down arm so we get more articulation.
Okay.
And then we went down to Phoenix and we had it too long and they would just droop out and just blow the drive lines out of it type deal. So we messed with that, changing those back and forth and back and forth. And, it never really kind of worked very well. And, if you remember Jim Peterson.
Yes.
So Jim Peterson was another guy that was kind of ahead of his time. And he started figuring out like the four link and stuff like that in the rear. So we kind of copied some of his stuff. We changed arms. He had arms that went under the axle, and he had all this in his mind. You could draw it up and everything on just different tractions and stuff like that. And me and my brother kind of stole part of his idea and kind of made our own. And then we started doing the TJ coils because that's what he was doing. So then we had leaf springs in the front and then a four link with TJ coils in the rear. And it, you know, and then that wasn't the best, but it did pretty good. And a lot of guys, you know, we ran that way for quite some time.
And how many, you came up to Cedar City then, that first Cedar City event?
Yes.
With Ranch? Okay.
Yeah.
And then, how many years did you run that, though, you know, the ARCA or what became Pro Rock? Did you run Bob Hazel events after that?
Yeah, so we ran all of Ranch's ARCA stuff. We ran all of Bob's Pro Rock stuff. And we never missed any of those. So we went to California and we did all the, you know, the ARCA stuff was like a lot of stuff around here.
Right.
Like Cedar City, we went there. We went there for years, back and forth. And then Johnson Valley, well, I guess it'd be Cougar Boots is what they called it, you know, then.
Right.
where we, the area that we were actually competing and stuff like that.
Yeah, closer to Lucerne.
Yeah. Where else did we?
When did you decide to go with the nitrous or forced induction? Because didn't you guys do forced induction and nitrous?
So we started with, like, our engine-wise, we started with throttle body truck engines. And then we went to the Vortex. And by then, we were gone to Cedar City so many different times. There was one big vertical climb that we always had a hard time. Never really had enough horsepower. Tire-wise, we still didn't have – we were running super swampers. You know, back then, no one really had any good tires.
Right.
And so we tried nitrous. And after we got done with nitrous, they banned nitrous because it didn't work out very well. So, yeah, I hit the nitrous and it blew the whole top of the engine off. Because apparently it was leaking into it. We just had like a little fogger nozzle and it blew the intake off the engine.
I remember that.
And I think there was grown men running over wives and little kids to get away from me because the fire was so big when it blew.
Oh God. So who did most of the driving? Was it you or Joe?
In the beginning, we kind of just rotated back and forth. It was your turn, my turn type deal. Eventually, I did most of the driving pretty much. And then my brother was just a better spotter. I don't know if I was a better driver, but he was definitely a better spotter. And it just, we kind of started flowing and going back and forth when we were just having fun was fine. But when we actually started doing a little bit better and wanted to do better, and we had to just kind of find our spot and then make that, you know, our ticket, you know, and just get better at what we were doing.
So then along came the Weavers with XRA.
Yes.
And then that was pretty much your guys' focus after that point, wasn't it?
Yeah, start doing the rock racing and stuff like that. That it was obviously it was kind of more our driving style. we had a it was a point and shoot for us, you know. You had Shannon, you had all those guys that were really good. Johnny G, you know, those guys, Chris Durham, I shouldn't say that. He didn't have any finesse. He bullied his way through a lot of that stuff as well. And all those Eastern guys that would come here, that's just kind of their driving style. But, you know, yeah, ours was point and shoot. And when they started adding the time and to try to go fast, that was became our focus.
Right. And you guys by then were out of the seven, weren't you? And you were... You built
yeah, one. Then we were straight two buggy by then.
Okay.
That was back in the day. I'm spacing a name. It was the aluminum tubs.
Aqualoo or Dave Knight, JP Dave Aluminum. Knight. Yes.
So Dave Knight gave us a couple of aluminum bodies, the narrowed 48-inch narrowed bodies. And so we started building off of those. And it worked really, really good. Those things were so, so strong, but then it got to where it was too much. So then by the time we got done hacking them up and cutting more and more out of them, we just ended up finally just eliminating a body completely. And it just was basically a tube chassis with a narrow Jeep hood. As you know, we always ran a Jeep.
Okay.
Tried to stay that way.
So who was a big influence in that early days of rock crawling? You know, you mentioned Shannon. and some of the East Coast guys that had a similar style. Was there anybody, any one driver that really kind of stood out as an influence?
Dang, there was a lot. I mean, Shannon, obviously, you know, every time you seen him, he was coming out trying to, you know, push the envelope. Back then we had Steve Remore. He had, I'm spacing the big,
the Avalanche.
Yeah. So he had the Assassin, was that single seat rear steer.
It was on 2.5 ton Rockwells, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that. And he loaned that to me and Chris Durham one time, and we actually went and did a competition in California. That's how much that guy trusted us.
Wow.
And we took third, never drove the thing. Chris was actually my spotter. We just went out there just to go out there, and Chris was on one of his back then he would come here for 2-3 months at a time and not go back. And so we went out to California and did that Assassin, and it was so far ahead of its time. But, you know, you think back now and it's like, God, it was kind of redneck a little bit, you know, it was so stiff. It didn't climb very well, but rear steer was kind of cheating at the time. Tracy Jordan. I mean, you know, a lot of these guys that, you know, I never looked at them, some great rock crawlers. I mean, they became friends. Like, we're all still friends.
Right.
And we don't have to see each other, but, you know, with social media, you're able to keep up with everybody. Everybody has families. Lot of good rock crawler guys are, you know, more involved in their families and stuff. They didn't get their kids. I mean, Shannon, you know, he has his kids, you know, into the racing and stuff like that. So they're still in it, but a lot of guys got out when it was time to play dad, I guess. But we all stick together. Still see each other every once in a while, still talk to each other. So it's a solid group of the original guys.
Yeah, I still see that. Even though I, you know, when I was doing Cal Rocks first and then the beginning years of We Rock, I didn't see all the drivers. Like, I don't think, I don't know if you guys actually ran in any of our rock crawls. Because I think
we did some of the We Rock stuff. Cal Rocks, we didn't. Yeah. It was
okay.
Budget wise, it was too far to drive. You guys did a lot of the California stuff, so we didn't do really any of that. We Rock, we did.
Then when we got guys like, you know, Johnny G, and you know, we're putting on the event a few years ago there in Chokecherry on Grand Nationals, and he comes up and starts talking to me, and I didn't even recognize him. He's got his boys with him.
Yeah.
And I go, "Oh, so you've rock crawled?" And he goes, "Yeah, my name's, you know, Johnny Gillian." And I was like, "Oh, damn, Johnny G." Didn't recognize you. Sorry. You know?
Yeah. We all got getting old.
Yes, exactly.
And Johnny G was one of the guys that, you know, he was an awesome driver. Avalanche built him some awesome vehicles. But I mean, he was just a good guy and, you know, really, really talented. And he had like the game face, like he was serious about it and nothing really startled him. He would try any climb. If it was a bonus, he was going to do it. Yeah, he was definitely a big influence to a lot of people that got into it.
Right.
He was the BFG poster child and stuff, you know. I mean, that was all a big deal.
Yeah, that Carnivore.
Yes.
So in those days, we're rock crawling, we're racing. You and your brother are doing Brown's Fabrication, and You're you're keeping it all together. What cars did you build for others?
So Matt and Garrett Sisson,
okay,
which, you know, they did very well in, the rock crawling and stuff. And, they started off with, a Wrangler that Garrett had, just like, kind of like us. I mean, it had nothing. They're out wheeling it and competing, and they had a really bad crash and basically totaled it. And so me and my brother were already kind of doing the tube chassis type thing. And, built them a rig in, I think, like 10 days.
Wow.
And we gave them a complete chassis. We took everything we could off of their Jeep, put it in that, and they ran the whole time with, you know, a Brown's chassis of some sort. And they, like us, I mean, that stuff was evolving so fast, and people were coming up with such great ideas that, you know, we were changing our Jeeps out, completely changing them out. You know, every couple of months we'd have a brand new one again, because you just kind of had to at the time.
The sport was absolutely evolving. Everybody was coming up with new ideas and how to get things, you know, different ideas. I mean, the one that was really out of the box, of course, was Tiny.
Yeah, that was definitely out of the box for sure.
But it was well copied.
It was. We had Tiny, and then we had the Scrappers. BZ had that Scrapper. Tracy had some version of it. I mean, and then obviously Shannon. I mean, once he started getting, that guy, if he could just touch something, his brain is way, way out there on, building stuff for sure. He came up with, I think that Tiny was pretty much his. I mean, he did a lot of custom stuff, but once he seen that Tiny, it was over. That was enough, I think, to put him over the edge, where he was out there and pushing the limits for sure.
Yeah, cutting edge.
And he has a family that just is all about race stuff. Nick, his dad, I mean, he has cousins, uncles, and still does. They're always involved in that stuff. And, you know, he wouldn't have never been able to. I mean, we were all poor then. I mean, we had tire sponsors that were just giving us tires. I mean, we had no money. Everything we could work and make that week, we spent it, and, you know, the next weekend to go travel.
True. Very true. So looking back on all those early events, say before XRA, what location or what event stands out as the one that in your mind will be your awe moment, or where you realized that, you know, you were doing something that was just completely cool?
Probably, Cedar City was always my favorite town to go to. Farmington always had a great events, because the people, there was a ton of people, but it was my home, but, you know, everybody was so used to it. I mean, for me to go out of town, I love Cedar City. That town really, really backed the rock crawlers. But the one event that probably is always stand out was the first Super Crawl.
Okay.
It was here in Farmington, and, you know, I think there was 100 of us or 90 of us or something. And, you know, you had the best of the best involved in that. And it was a good event. It was just, there was thousands of people. And, you know, that's when you had Walker Evans. He had his S10. You just had so many of the, I guess, big drivers involved in that one event. It was a big deal.
Yes, it was a big deal. That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
So what are you up to nowadays?
Nowadays, I quit, quit racing when my kids started doing sports. You know, like I talked before, I gave up sports for, to work, you know, to do my cars and stuff like that. And so I in my mind, I didn't miss out, but I missed out. So all of my kids are really into sports. So I've just put all my attention into, their sports. All my kids are good enough. They're on travel teams. So, I mean, so I spent a ton of money on that. It's like, I couldn't even have a budget to even try to race if I wanted to. My son's football, you know, I got daughter's volleyball. They travel. I got traveling soccer. You know, any parent that knows anything about traveling sports beyond school, you know, it adds up. It's a lot of fun, but it definitely takes a lot of time. We're going a lot. So that's what I do. I just do my kids.
Are you still involved with Brown's Fabrication or?
No, I end up selling out to my brother, and he changed the name to Fabwork. So he has, I don't even know if he'd even a fab shop anymore. He does so much razor stuff. So I closed it down, and then I kind of just didn't do much for a couple of years. And now I help a buddy run a car lot that we sell all kinds of cars. We sell the normal cars, but then, you know, we got Ferraris and Porsches and old cars and 55 Chevys and old Corvettes. And so we do a lot of that stuff too. Me and my son are building what I call as OJ Bronco.
Nice.
It's a 93 Bronco. It's more a pre-runner. My son's 16. We've been working on this about a year, and with COVID, it was hard to build. We couldn't get no parts. So we got race seats, 4 race seats in it, and we got triple bypass Fox shocks on it. We got Solo Motorsports beams on it. We got Threat Motorsports long extended arms on it. 513 gears, 37s that I got from Lauren Healy. So nice. It's got Nittos, pre-runner quarter panels, fenders. We put a 6.0 Chevy in it. So it's a pretty trick little pre-runner truck for his first high school car, I guess.
Is it runnable now? Is he driving it, or is it still in process?
Still in process. Almost ready. We waited 6 months for 2 of our Fox shocks. We made it. We waited like 8 months for the other 2 shocks. Parts. It's coming together pretty fast now. It's not quite the problem, but for the longest time, we were just sitting. At one time, it took 9 months to get the gears for it.
Wow.
I couldn't even talk to anybody for so long, you know, because of COVID and stuff like that. So that was supposed to, he was supposed to be driving that at 15. I had to buy him another truck so he had something to get to school and stuff, but we're pretty close to it firing off. If anybody's ever done an LS swap, I mean, you can buy the harness and it's got stickers all over it. It tells you where to plug this in and plug that in. So it's not really that bad. Most of our custom stuff was our front beams and shock towers and stuff like that. Still needs a roll cage, and we'll probably get Randy at Jimmy's to help us bend up some pipe, because I haven't done it in so long. I'll let one of our buddies that, you know, does it still all the time, help us out on that, and he'll be ready.
Well, that sounds like a great vehicle for a high schooler for sure.
Yeah. It's he's a woods guy. He loves to go fishing, loves to go camping, wants to go out in the middle of nowhere. And I mean, we just basically overbuilt him the ultimate go out in the middle of nowhere truck. And once he gets out of school, my goal is once he's done with sports and stuff like that is to try to get a side by side and do some of the smaller desert races and stuff like that and get back into it.
Cool.
I just kind of got to let him get through his fun and his teen years that he'll remember forever. And then we'll start kind of our own memories again, you know, and try to get some racing done.
So do you remember was it Arizona out there at the, by Campbell's, close to Campbell's shop, that man-made course? I don't know if it was a season event or if it was
out at Firebird.
Firebird.
Yeah, Firebird Raceway. Yes. Yeah.
And then we all ended up at Campbell's. I don't know if it was Friday night or Saturday night. I think it was Saturday night.
Yes.
That was quite the party.
That was quite the party. So Campbell, Shannon, and those guys, when they throw a party, they throw a party. So they called him Prada Ron, I believe is his name.
Yes.
And that's been one of his sponsors forever. He is like the ultimate barbecuer. And that guy, when he starts cooking, he can cook for hundreds of people. And they would throw a party, and it would be basically catered, let's say. All the beer, barbecue, moonshine, you name it, it was always there at his parties.
Yeah, that was quite the party, is from what I remember that night. From what I remember of it that night.
From what everybody remembers. Some of that we had to be told about the next day. That's how good of a party it was.
That's when I realized that you and your brother were scrappers, too.
Yes. Yep. That's been an issue for me for quite some time. But, yeah, ended up with a fight at that place.
Oh, wow. So let's dive into some memories, say like that, of those early years, things that made either Farmington or Cedar City just stand out. I know that there was some things that happened in Cedar City that led to a couple of guys getting Brandon, I think it was told never to come back.
Yes.
And then, that was some crazy nights there. Anything like that that you remember? No, you don't have to name any names and keep the innocence or the non-innocent still innocent.
Oh, I'll put a name out there. Randy Ellis. Now that guy can have some fun. And, I have two stories for Randy that I'll never, ever forget. One is in Cedar City, and we were all partying at the hotels, and the police came to tell us that we needed to all go inside our rooms. And he decided to tie one of the, your basic picnic table, the white plastic picnic tables.
Right.
Everybody has. So he got one of those and he tied it to the bumper of the cop car. So when the cop took off, he started dragging three people that were sitting on this table that was upside down and they didn't know. So they're driving out of the parking lot towing a picnic table.
With people on it.
With people on it. And then they realized when they could hear it screeching across the ground that they stop. And I think the cops, they didn't get mad. They were at such awe that anybody would even think of tying a rope to the cop car and being towed like that they didn't even know what to do. Cedar City is small town cops. And I'm sure they had lots of stories themselves, but that was one that they just didn't even know what to even do about it. And, so stuff like that. Another time we were in Las Cruces and Randy had this big white dog, like a husky type dog. Well, then that night everybody went to Hooters and they decided they were going to buy the hottest wings that you could possibly buy. And no one could eat them. So they brought them back to our hotel and everybody, you know, everybody's like, I can do it. I can do it. And they all tried it. They couldn't do it. So they just took the whole styrofoam thing and they threw it in the bushes. Didn't think nothing of it. All of us are drinking. And then we realize that Randy's dog had ate them all.
Oh, Jesus.
All of them. And apparently dogs don't sense spice or whatever. So nobody tells Randy anything. So the next morning I see him and I'm like, how's your dog? And he's like, how did you know my dog was sick? And I tell him about him eating all the wings, and this dog, I guess, was blowing both sides in his hotel room, and he didn't understand what was wrong with his dog, because it's like the perfect dog, and it is sick from eating hot wings.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So there's a lot of stories like
that. But the dog survived.
This dog survived. Okay. It was all good.
We have to clarify that.
Yeah, he had a rough night.
That's great. Did you ever get to Jellicoe, Tennessee?
I did not. Oh, nope.
Didn't do any of the XRA out there or anything? Okay.
No, I never got that far. Most of mine was just west, a lot of California stuff. Yeah, just we stayed out through here. There was so much going on. We just really didn't have time to travel and make a lot of those because there was there for a while. I mean, it was two or three a month.
Right.
And it was all we could do just to, you know, luckily we worked on our own stuff, but it was all we could do to just keep up.
So what do you miss most about those days of the early racing or rock crawling?
I guess hanging out with all the guys, you know, back in the day, I mean, I guess we were serious. I mean, we spent a lot of money at it. We wanted to do good. But, you know, we all got together and every evening there was no competitor, this or that. We were just all friends. So, you know, we built all these big friendships and stuff like that, even though we were there to, you know, to beat each other. But we gave each other transmissions and transfer cases and parts and, you know, I guess what's the word, camaraderie, you know, it was just good.
Right.
It wasn't so serious, I guess. It was serious on the trails and stuff, but, or on the obstacles, but I don't know. It wasn't quite as serious as it is now.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think guys back in those early days wanted to beat each other on the rocks, not beat someone because they broke.
Yeah.
You know, you would do everything you could to help to help your other competitor to get running again.
Yeah. And I still see that. I mean, the guys are still doing that, but I think it was a larger group of people that, you know, were really helping each other and giving away parts and stuff like that. I guess we were a lot of our vehicles were a lot alike too. You know, you got stuff like, you know, that's on Jesse's Haynes buggy. We don't have no spirit. I got no spirits to help him. I would, if I could, but you know what I mean?
Right.
It's a one-off buggy type stuff. And you just can't even do, help guys out the way we used to.
Right, because everybody was typically running, you know, the same basic motor packages or trannies and axles. So we're, you know, I get it.
Yeah, you know, when someone finally got an Atlas transfer case, it was like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. You know, I mean, we were still doing 205s and twin sticking them and making our own stuff. Everybody was. And, you know, when this new stuff started coming out, you know, Curry was huge. Curry was also one of the people that, you know, put a lot of you know, R&R on all this stuff for a lot of people. He was a lot of help for a lot of people too.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of innovation. Remember the fire ant when it had the winch? I think he was the first one really using a suck down, or at least the winch set up like he did, where, you know, there was pulleys and everything else going so he could control front and rear. And
yeah,
you know, it was pretty insane.
Yeah. And then, you know, the water in the tires, and then we had steel shot in the tires. I mean, every weekend we were trying to think of something, some better way to advance something, because we just didn't have the technology. So we were, you know, poor man it, you know?
Yeah. Those early days, there was so much innovation.
Yeah.
I mean, I think rock crawling really helped the aftermarket explode back in the early and mid 2000s.
Yeah. You know, it's even like, you know, like I said, we started off with super swampers and everybody was buying their own tires. And then we got tied in with BF Goodrich and started running the tires. And then they, when they wanted to, I guess it would be the start of the K2s, you know, they were sending us, first they started with like faxes, and they sent us these treads on a fax. And this is like Frank and Jeff Cummins and Gary Enterline. These guys are really pushing the envelope. They must have had a huge budget. So we started doing the tires. And they sent us a couple of sets of tires. One was called a G.I. Joe, and one was called a Hulk. It had these crazy tread on there, and they had us cut our own tires.
Right. They came, and they we started came as cutting blanks. Yeah.
Blanks, yeah. You know, it almost looked like a military old Willie's Jeep tire. And we started cutting our own, and then, you know, we kind of all came to a agreement on which one was a little bit better. So then they started trying to make them, and you know, BFG, they came to Farmington, and we had like Tracy, the Sissons, Jason Pauly, you know, all these guys that were involved in trying to make this tire. It was me and my brother, and they brought a semi load of tires, and we had, since there was a couple of like Tracy's Jeep and Polly's, you know, those are all the same. And then ours was the same as Sisson's. And so they had these big anchors, like fishing weight anchor deals. And we would do pull tests and try to figure out, and, you know, you'd figure out that the tire was too soft. So then your knobbies would just turn over and run on the side so they wouldn't get traction. You know, because we didn't understand, we just thought stickier was better, and it wasn't. And it was like a fine line, and they had A, B, C, D. You know, they still didn't let us know a lot of stuff, and they, you know, they really put a lot of effort into those tires.
And they did a hell of a good job too.
Yeah, they did, and you know, and they got the best of the best drivers on them, and you know, they dominated. And, you know, it's, I've been in it for so long, you know, it was BFG and they had the best drivers. And, you know, then you had, the Goodyear, you know, was in all that stuff. I think Goodyear was actually a little bit before, the BFGs, but they kind of, it's all about budget. You know, right now we have Nitto that's just throwing tons of money, and they got the best drivers. I think, honestly, they have a great tire, but when you start putting the best drivers on any of a good tire, I mean, you're going to see a little bit of dominance.
Yeah, I think both of those tire companies did a really good job of providing tires to teams and then picking the teams to keep supporting.
Yeah,
so that they kept winning. And then everybody thought, well, I have to have that tire.
They did. Yep.
To beat them. Which, yep. And maybe it didn't really need to be that way. But nobody could understand that because, you know, well, all the winners are on those tires. Well,
yeah.
Because they also picked the best competitors, whether it was,
they did.
Whether it was the rock crawling, the racing, the rock racing, or even in with the Ultra 4 racing style now.
Yeah. Yeah. And you watch, you know, and then we had Toyo tires came in, and, you know, we ended up going to Toyo, and, you know, we were just running just street tires, just DOT truck tires, because they didn't have anything ready. And then Toyo, they literally on a plane sent me five tires. They flew five tires to farm to New Mexico for me to have their sticky compound tires. And they did that to Mark Berger. Who else? There's about a handful of us all got tires. We went to Salt Lake and we dominated. And the tire was good. And then Toyo had a budget. They found the best drivers. They got the best drivers, and they started podium.
Right.
And, you know, that's just kind of, you know, you start dumping that, and BFG didn't, they picked a few of their guys, and they're still on BFGs. And they kind of kept those guys, but they had built this aftermarket, you know, all the truck tires and all the stuff. They did exactly what they intended to do. Toyo did the same thing. They dumped so much money into the tires and getting that tire built up, and everybody wanted the Toyo RT and, you know, MT, and then they kind of stepped back a little bit, and then you get, you know, their sister company jumps in there, and Nitto. Nitto's got the top drivers. Yep. Are they a good tire? They're a great tire, and they're a great company, and they got Chris on there that is good to his people, and he's really easy to talk to, and they're doing exactly what they intended to do. They dumped a bunch of money, and it is selling them tires. It's selling them out of tires.
Correct.
Yep. And it's been fun to watch that, but it, you know, the marketing and the money, and you can watch them do it. And when they see their what they spent and the money that they're getting in, they've kind of backed off a little bit. Oh, a lot of these other tire guys. Max has always had really good tires, and they had some good drivers on them, but they never, I don't think, ever put that budget together to be able to get those top guys. They did get some top guys, but not the big, large group.
Right.
I think they could have done the same thing, but they just didn't have that baller status money, you know, to get more than just a couple of good guys.
True. True. You're looking, your son is 16 now. So two more years of school.
Two more years. Yeah.
Two more years. And then you get to, and then he'll be not necessarily out of the house or on his own, but you'll be able to concentrate more on you and racing. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Your daughters are older, right?
I got older and younger daughters. I mean, my sports won't be totally over, but I'll have a lot less of a minute by then. So, you know, it's definitely my love, but I just, it's got to be about timing. You know, I'll let my son do this, and you know, he's done with football after high school. I mean, he's already pretty beat up, and he loves it, but, you know, he knows that football's over it, you know, after high school, and it's, you know, he kind of knows my game plan as well, and, you know, we want to kind of do some of that stuff, and I have a younger daughter that would probably, you know, want to do the same thing. So I just got to kind of sit back and let them do their thing, and then I want to get back in it for sure.
Excellent.
And it'll be an off-road type stuff for sure. I don't think I'll ever get back into the rock crawling part of it, but other than, you know, playing stuff like that. But after doing King of the Hammers and the rock racing, I mean, and then, you know, helping Mike Palmer go to Mexico in his trophy truck, and you know, helping all those guys down there. Like once you, that gets in your blood, it's hard to.
You have that need for speed.
Yeah, you can't get that out. And I'll never have a budget to some of those teams and stuff like that that I've helped out, you know, through the years. I've still kind of kept up with the pre-running part of it and learned a lot of pre-running because of JT and different guys. I mean, these guys are pretty set up and know all that stuff really well. So I learned kind of by a pretty good group.
Yes.
And that's just what I want to, you know, get into.
Cool.
And we would do a side-by-side, but I think a side-by-side is more expensive than even a class 7, you know, truck. But it's probably the best thing to try to learn on.
I think so, because you can get – there's a better chance of getting factory support. Or getting support out of it. You know, the UTVs, you know, they're like the tire companies back in the rock crawling days, where, you know, they're willing to throw some money at it because they know it's going to help them sell units.
Yeah.
You know, that win on Sunday, sell on Monday type attitude.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And they're evolving. Like I remember all the Jeep stuff and all that stuff. And now you watch the side-by-side guys and the stuff that's evolving with them. So they're just kind of getting started.
True.
You know, now they got side by sides with 35s and geary. They got so portals much stuff. Yeah. Portals. And they're just like on the brink. It's just like the Jeep stuff and all that. When you start going to the extreme, they are producing stuff that's holding up. I mean, you got RCV that's making these, you know, first it was, well, still, you know, you still got Lauren and all these guys running these CVs, but now they're making them for the side-by-sides. And they don't even have enough power to break those things.
Right. Yeah, the old days of the Gorilla axles for the UTVs is kind of over.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just your weekend warrior guy that buys those, you know. You start getting this other stuff, and, yeah, they're expensive, but you'll never buy another one type deal. I mean, it's crazy the technology these companies are making and the materials that they're making. You know, I always had Jack making my axles and my U-joint. That guy was so far ahead of the game as well with this 300M and all that stuff. You're like, what is that? You know?
Unobtainium.
Yeah.
So true. So true. When you can take something small and make it so strong that it won't break, you know, like 300M axles. You know, I'm looking at that on this Cherokee that we're building right now with a 6.0 in it. It's like, you know, do I really need 60s or can I stick to my 44s and just put 300M 35 spline axles in there?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm thinking that way, so it's lightweight.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't, the materials now, like I said, and then you got the cryo and heat and it, I mean, do you even make those better? I mean, they got
true.
It's crazy how they're making that stuff so much smaller and so much stronger.
So is there anything that we haven't touched bases on that you'd like to talk about or that you can think that our listeners might enjoy listening to?
I mean, I guess we kind of went through the whole build of this, I mean, obviously we missed a lot of stuff, but we hit a lot of good memories and a lot of people. I mean, I could mention names forever on why this sport is where it's at. I mean, there's just a ton of guys. And there's only a small, you know, little group of these guys that are even still in it. You know, and they're kind of, you know, Shannon's still in it, but he's handing that over to his kids. They're really good racers, and Shirley's son. I mean, it's cool to see all these kids coming up. I didn't know all of them, but you know, the ones that I've seen, you know, I still remember them being carried around with their parents.
Yeah, and Bailey Campbell.
You know, yeah,
I mean. And now she's and now got a youngin'.
You know, they're having kids of their own. And I'm like, whoa, I've been around a long time in all this. And it's really fun to watch.
Yes, it is.
you know, and I love the Campbell family and stuff like that. You know, I'm probably the closest to them, you know, but I still watch these other, you know, other kids that are coming up, you know, that their dads raced or whatever. And it's really cool to watch. I love that. I did love to watch that girl that just competed here. That went off the edge.
Caitlin Boren. Yes.
Yeah, she's awesome. I don't even know her.
But yeah, they just started competing a couple of years ago. Her dad did. And then she decided she wanted to drive. So he spots her. And, yes. You know, after that big tumble she took off of that rock there in Farmington, you know, everybody was really panicked. And she, you know, first her microphone came unplugged. So her dad couldn't hear her. And was panicked that she was knocked out. And as soon as he gets there, she sticks her head out of the Jeep and goes, "Somebody better have gotten that on, you know, on film."
Yeah, I was standing right there, and I'm like, "Oh, she's badass!" Like this is, I love to see that.
Yes,
I mean it's kind of this hand-me-down stuff, like, you know, these up and coming kids that, you know, they have no idea what they're just getting themselves into. They're just starting, and it's that is so cool to watch.
And to know that the sport is going to continue.
Yes. Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's never going away. It at times it may be bigger than one year, then next, maybe not, but it still has life, and it's not going to be stopping.
And that's
because of kids like that.
Right. Exactly. And that's, you know, we had, Landon Brown out there, who is 8 years old, driving.
Yeah, him too. Yep,
and just the cutest kid. To, you know, he gets up there on the podium and he reads his list of sponsors and thanks everyone, and it's just, you know, 8 years old and he does it better than the adults.
Yes, yes, yeah, and like all that is so fun. And, you know, I'm glad you're still doing all this, and, you know, this stuff is still going on, and this rock crawling is still going on. You know, I know, like, the Ultra 4 and all that stuff, but that's so out of so many people's realm of being able to do that stuff and having that rock crawling, and it's still active. And, you know, and I started from, like, just the first few, and it's still going after all these years. It's good to see.
I agree. Well, RJ, I want to say thank you so much for coming on and spending a bit over an hour and talking about your life in motorsports and off-road and rock crawling and racing. And I want to just say thank you for always being that friend. I mean, every time we come into Farmington, you know, I know I can come find you and we can, you know, sit and talk, or you come out to the events if I don't have time to make it into town. And, you know, it's always nice to see you and your brother. So I want to say thank
you. Yeah. Well, thanks for having me. And it is. And that's, you know, I hit on that. I mean, we have a group of people in this community, in this off-road community, that are like friends for life. I don't even have to talk to you for a year, 2 years, whatever. But when I see you, we could just pick back up. And there's so many people like that. And I'm sure it's the same for you. You've been everywhere. You can't see everybody all the time. But when you go to a town and you see that one guy, you're like, "Hey, how you doing?" And it's just like you never miss the day.
It's true. And
that's how this community is, this off-road community.
Yeah. And I am so thankful for that and being able to make it a lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I hope more people get involved with it.
Yeah, you know, that I'm sure that's what pushes you. I mean, you've been doing this a long time, and it's a lot of work. And I'm sure there's many times you're like, I'm just done. But man, when you have that, right?
Every Monday morning,
you're like, yeah, and you see these people, and you're like, okay, one more, because I love these people, you know.
Yep.
So it keeps you motivated.
Agreed. All right. RJ, thank you so much. And okay. Good luck in the future. Hope you get your son's pre-runner done shortly. and he gets a chance to enjoy that and, you know, has fun in high school. And then I hope you guys have fun racing.
Yeah, me too. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Okay, RJ. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, bye.
We'll see you. Bye.
If you enjoy these podcasts, please give us a rating. Share some feedback with us via Facebook or Instagram, and share our link among your friends who might be like-minded. Well, that brings this episode to an end. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll catch you next week with Conversations with Big Rich. Thank you very much.